Fasten your seatbelt. Turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Today on Route 51, we welcome back to our Wisconsin Public Radio studios a very special guest, Marge Gibson, the Executive Director of REGI, the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, a wildlife rehabilitation and learning center based in rural Antigo. I'm Glenn Moberg. Marge Gibson is one of the top experts on birds of prey in the world. She and her small staff take in literally hundreds of raptors, waterfowl, cranes, and songbirds every year. And she handles so many birds that REGI has outgrown its available space and is looking at breaking ground on a new wildlife center this fall. Marge Gibson's life has been the stuff of legend, starting with her work decades ago at Alaska's Exxon Valdez disaster, pioneering new techniques to rescue the oil-drenched birds that have unfortunately become a symbol of the environmental problems facing our planet. We'll be talking to her about the successful recovery of species in Wisconsin, like the bald eagle, and the new threats faced by the ecosystems that they depend on. And we'll have a few words for those of you who have birds as pets. Now, if you've got a raptor, bird, or wildlife question, or just a comment for Marge, maybe you've seen some of her work, maybe you just want to say thank you to her, you can join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage. That's wpr.org/route51, and I will read it live on the air. And Marge Gibson, it is so good to have you back with us again.
Good morning. It's really great to be here, Glenn.
And you have brought with you a friend, a peregrine falcon, that folks in Radio Land who can't see what's happening in the studio right now. Marge has this full-grown peregrine falcon, and it's sitting on her gloved hand. And what's the falcon's name, Marge?
This is Stella, and it's really appropriate that we're here today in Wausau because Stella lived for a number of years on the Weston Power Plant and had babies there. WPS actually has videos of her and her babies in the past. But she was shot illegally, of course, about 3 years ago and has been with us ever since.
Why would somebody shoot a magnificent bird like that?
That's a great question, and I think it's the reason that we continue to work so hard at the education that we do with the public.
And a peregrine falcon is an incredibly fast bird.
They dive at 240 miles an hour, and they are amazing. I mean, everything about them is incredible. Off the endangered list for the state of Wisconsin at this time, but still endangered in many places.
And Stella, was she shot in the air while flying?
She was shot in the air while flying, and actually her wing was amputated by the bullet. So
she's only got one wing.
She only has one wing.
But she has very big talons with very sharp claws and a very strong beak, and she is looking around right now wondering what she's doing on a radio show.
She's wondering about this microphone, but she's very interested. I mean, they are very intelligent birds, and she's never been in a studio before, so this is a new experience for her.
So what is Stella's new life like now that you've rescued her?
Well, she does education, and she actually does a really good job with it. She's a very calm bird, despite the fact everything she's been through. Coming as an adult, they're not always able to calm down and work for the public or work with the public, but she does, and she's really magnificent.
The bird is, I would estimate, 2 feet from head to tail,
about,
maybe longer than that.
Yeah, about 24 inches. Uh-huh.
Again, just a beautiful bird. It's got the one gray wing and the gray head, and then this beautiful mottled brown and black breast with white legs.
She's an autumn variety of peregrine, And they are the peregrine that was in our area naturally when time began.
And how are the birds doing at the Weston Power Plant right now? Are they still nesting there?
They actually fledged already, and they did nest this year and have fledged. We did have one of the chicks that ran into a problem, and it was released back up there. So everything is well.
Marge, you deal with horrific abuse to birds. This bird that had to have its wing amputated because it was shot out of the sky. You had an owl with its legs cut off by someone. People shooting large birds of prey for fun. Why do they do it?
You know, it's a question that we ask ourselves. And in the clinic, we, of course, work with interns as well. So we have to do some education with them. They're not expecting to see horrific things come in or horrific people to deal with. But the truth is that we see the best and the worst of people. We see people that go through huge lengths to try to save something, a tiny duck or something, which we really appreciate. And then we see the opposite. And it's, there's no kind feelings about abuse. We obviously, it's very difficult for us. And but it is something we deal with daily.
How do you do it? You've got this bird who's just absolutely calm as can be, sitting on your hand. And I have seen you approach an injured owl or eagle in the wild, and you can walk up to them somehow without a net, sometimes without gloves, talk to the bird, calm it down, get the bird to the point where you can pick it up, hold it, and take it back to your shelter for safety. You're a bird whisperer. were you born with that talent?
I was born a little odd. Yes, I was. The thing is that if they feel comfortable with you, you're dealing with intelligent beings. And if they feel comfortable and no need to defend themselves, they will allow you to help them. And they do know that they need help at that point. So basically, we work with them, not against them.
How many birds are you taking care of right now at the Reggie headquarters in Antigo?
We have about 350 right now. And we do about 1,000 a year, 900 to 1,000 a year. And about 100 of those are bald eagles.
So many people have the impression that all you do is take care of eagles, hawks, owls, and raptors, but that's not true.
Oh, no. We do many, many smaller birds, passerines. I think we've had about 40 robins this year, little ones that come in. We do hummingbirds. We've just had a hummingbird release a few days ago, as a matter of fact. So we do everything in feathers, anything that's federally protected.
Anything from eagles to hummingbirds.
That's it. And sometimes in the same hour.
If people were to go to the center right now, describe it for them, what would they see as they drive into the grounds?
Well, we have a large flight building that will be on their right as they come in. And that large building, people are sometimes confused as to it looks like a storage building or something, but that's actually where our eagles fly and exercise. It's very important for them to have conditioning before they're released.
How tall is the building?
It's 28 feet tall. The ceilings are 28 feet tall, so the roof is a bit taller than that. And it's about 50 feet wide, each section of it.
So the birds can actually fly as they're being rehabilitated.
They fly, and that's really important because they have to develop, the physical therapy. We know it's important for us. But for them, really vital because they are going back out to the wild. They have to be able to catch dinner that same day, and it's really important.
And you've got 100 eagles on the property right now?
Not right now, but we do about 100 a year.
100
right
a year,
now,
okay.
I think we have 22.
That's still a lot of eagles.
That's a bunch of eagles. That's a whole flock of eagles, yeah.
And you also take care of injured birds in your own home. How many birds do you have right now in your house sitting under lights in cardboard boxes and scattered around the property?
Well, at night, the babies have to be fed every 20 minutes their first week of life. Or if we have critical patients, it's easier to have them with me than, in the clinic. So, I have anywhere from maybe 10 to 15 up at any given night.
How many people do you have helping you out there?
I've got 4 staff. A lot of people think that we have a lot of volunteers, and that's not right. I would love to have volunteers. And many wildlife centers do have volunteers and function on them. But we live in a rural area. That's sort of a smaller area, a little bit remote, which is excellent for getting wildlife in and for getting endangered species. And we do a lot of endangered species.
Oh, there she goes.
She just roused, which is actually she's calm, and that kind of shows you that she's relaxed here. But anyway, so we get a lot of endangered species, warblers and the sparrow species that are having troubles, and our numbers are dropping. So it's a great place for wildlife, but not a great place to attract volunteers.
Oh, Stella, baby, I'm sorry you've only got one wing. She's trying to stretch both of her wings out, and there's only one.
She's rowing right now. She actually, this is a compliment to you. It's kind of interesting that she's doing this right now. She just roused, which is a term for when the birds kind of rearrange their feathers, and they don't do that unless they're very calm, and she just did, even as we're talking in the microphone here. So she's really calm, and it kind of shows you the intelligence and the adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
As they say, the sign of intelligence is adaptability, and she's got that all over.
We see a lot of eagles in Wisconsin right now, but it wasn't that long ago when they were almost wiped out in the continental United States, back in the early 60s, because of DDT. In fact, there were only a handful remaining in northern Wisconsin. So they've made quite a turnaround.
They have made a comeback, and in large part that's because they have been protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Endangered Species Act, which I hope can be preserved.
So that legislation is vitally important.
It really is.
And we shouldn't be messing around with the Endangered Species Act. That's what I'm gleaning from your comments.
Absolutely. I think that, when something works, why fix it? And we have a process that works really, really well. And I really don't understand why there's some concern about fixing it or taking it away.
A lot of the people in government right now on the federal level would try to do away with the Endangered Species Act or gut it if they could, and there are proposals to that effect.
Right. I'm aware of that, and it's, it's a very sad situation. You try to understand why someone would, and there's really no common sense reason.
What emerging threats do you see for our wildlife and the ecosystems they depend on?
I think that we have to be very careful that we maintain, as our population grows, that we maintain good habitats, good space for them to be able to live and to hunt and to be able to be successful. We also have to be aware of our waterways. I think that too has come across some softening of the standards by which they're being protected now.
Mm-hmm.
And not only, of course, is groundwater and our waterways important for us, and I think that there's too little emphasis being put on that as well, but it's certainly important for wildlife. There's no signs up there that say, don't drink here because we fouled this water with some toxin. They don't know. And we do get a lot of birds in that have been poisoned, and increasingly so.
Now, let's look at the bigger picture. We've got fires right now ranging across much of the western United States and western Canada, even in the southeastern part of the U.S., which I wasn't aware of. The smoke has spread as far as New York City. We have hazy and smoky skies in Minnesota and in Wisconsin. What do those wildfires, what threats do they pose to wildlife, not just where they're occurring, but across the entire country?
Well, I think that there's just untold damage at the sites, of course. And that's something that, we're now looking at. Migration has started, and those places that you just expressed are places that migrating birds are going to set down in or look to set down in. And so their food sources are going to be gone. And everything from the atmosphere, the smoke and that sort of thing that affects their lungs. Birds have very tiny but very efficient lungs, and it's very hard for them to breathe. We don't know how it's going to affect them long term. We really don't. Just as the pesticides and things that we use and even the repellents that they're using to try to put the fires out, we don't know what long term effects those are going to have. They're necessary at this time, of course, but it's the long term that I think we need to we need to be aware of.
I talked to a top U.S. forestry official last year who said we're going to see more and more of these wildfires because the climate has changed. We've got – it's hotter, it's drier in certain places. Other places, it's wetter. For several years now, we've seen global temperatures that have been setting records month after month. And in recent weeks, we've had temperatures above 110 degrees in multiple locations around the globe, many of them setting new records. We've got wildfires not only in this hemisphere, but in Greece and Italy, right, and even in Sweden above the Arctic Circle, where the temperature has gone above 90 degrees. And then some are pointing to the record flooding in June in northern Wisconsin, almost wiped the city of Houghton off the map. That's right. A little bit of hyperbole, but not much. And they're tying that to climate change. How is all of that impacting our ecosystems and wildlife?
I think that, you know, the birds can adapt to a slow and gradual change. And that's, in fact, what happens when they evolve, you know, to use different methods of hunting or even nesting or habitats. But when it's sudden, as it has been, they can't adapt to it. And whole families and species can be wiped out in that way.
Now, we had a recent Minnesota Public Radio report documenting 23 ways in which climate change is impacting those who live in Minnesota and, by extension, those who live in Wisconsin. And they found that it's warmer. Winters are warming faster. Ice is melting earlier. It rains more. There are more heavy catastrophic rain events. Home and infrastructure damage is increasing. Lyme disease is spreading. Aspen are dying. Maples are moving further north. Moose are declining in Minnesota, and birds are moving north. So you don't need an advanced degree in atmospheric and oceanic science to appreciate that this is happening. All you have to do is open your eyes.
Absolutely. I don't understand those that aren't aware or are – I don't know if they're simply not paying attention. But temperature extremes, and I think that, you know, some of the snow that we had in April that and our lakes that were frozen into May last year or this year, it's kind of an example of that too. So you're looking at extremes, not only, you know, very, very hot, but also extreme the other way.
And people, you know, who you know, either aren't paying attention to the science or they're deliberately ignoring it will point to snow in April and say, what do you mean global warming? How can that be possible?
Well, it's global change. It's weather change, not only warming, but I think that, you know, we've got the extremes, and I think that that's the thing that needs to be pointed out.
Are there bird species right now that we can see in the north that never used to be here and are some disappearing?
You know, we are. We're starting to see merlins, for instance, moving further south, which is a small falcon. Years ago, when I first moved back to Wisconsin in 1990s, we didn't have them in our locale here. Until about maybe 10 years ago, we started to have the occasional merlin coming in from Canada, and vultures. Vultures have moved in quite interestingly.
Never used to see them when we moved here. We moved here in 93, and right, suddenly you can see vultures.
Exactly. I remember the first vulture that was documented nesting in Langley County. And my daughter and I went out to respond to a gentleman thinking that a ghost was inhabiting his old farmhouse. And, you know, it was a baby vulture. They're all dressed in white fluff, and they make a really interesting hissing sound. So he was just sure it was a ghost. And, you know, we went to investigate that.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question that I know your answer already, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Do you think it was a wise idea for President Trump to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Accords?
No, I don't. I think it's short-sighted. I can't imagine. First of all, the lack of cooperation with other countries, and something as important as this.
Today on Route 51, our guest is Marge Gibson, the executive director of the Raptor Education Group Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Antigo. You can find out more about donating for their new clinic at raptoreducationgroup.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/route51. We're going to take a short break, and when we we come back, we're going to change direction here. We're going to talk about the saga of Marge's pet, Tori the turkey. And we'll also have some advice for you folks who own pets who are birds. Here's Paul McCartney.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life you're only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird fly.
Late, great Aretha Franklin, who passed away just this morning, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 with our guest Marge Gibson, Executive Director of the Raptor Education Group Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Antigo. Marge and her small staff take care of about 1,000 injured eagles, raptors, loons, ducks, shorebirds, and songbirds every year, and they plan on opening an expanded wildlife center this fall. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our website, wpr.org/route51, and I will read it live on the air. Marge, we need to talk about your plans for a new wildlife center. That's the problem. You've got too many birds and not enough space. So what do you want to do?
We need to build a new clinic. And at this point, it's not a luxury to build a new clinic, but it's a necessity. We've been working out of a very small place. I think that people are always amazed when they come to deliver a bird or to admit a bird for us. And they see this little L-shaped 10 by 15 little space that we work out of. Our tub there is very famous. That's where all the loons swim, and people have seen it. We have 110,000 viewers on our Facebook page. But people don't realize that this is where we do all our food preparation. This is where we admit birds. This is where we do the exams. And this is where we do everything with them. It's efficient so far, but now we're starting to have breakdown in some of the things that need to be replaced, and it would be expensive to repair those areas, and building a new clinic is
necessary. So what's your dream for the new clinic? What do you want it to look like?
Well, it's not going to be huge. We aren't planning to add more staff, but it will give us more opportunity for different species and for doing more education. We do an awful lot of work with universities across the country, in fact, worldwide. Right now, we have a veterinarian from Colombia that will be with us for 4 months. And this is a very typical thing that happens at Reggie. We have a good reputation. We're proud of that, but it means a lot of people come to learn with us.
How much money is this going to cost? You're trying to raise money right now.
Right. We have it pinned at $179,000. And we're cutting costs everywhere we can. We bought some used things from the Elko School District when they were closing, and they're making a new dining area. Mm-hmm. So we bought those, and we're planning, and we're hoping that in September we can break ground.
How much money you're trying to raise?
$179,000.
Right. And if people are interested in learning more about this or maybe making a donation, where can they go?
They can go to our website, raptoreducationgroup.org, And you can, there's a donate button. You can, you know, send a check if that's most most speedy for you. We have have a Facebook GoFundMe program too. So any way that you'd like to help, we'd really appreciate it.
Now, those of us who follow you on Facebook have become fans of your celebrity pet, Tori the turkey, who used to have free reign in your house. Tell us a little bit about Tori and how you ended up adopting a turkey, a very unusual pet.
Well, you know, it was all an accident. Let me say this. Tori actually was delivered to our door at midnight one night, a two-day-old poult that someone had picked up off the road. And in fact, at first we thought maybe she was a domestic turkey. We weren't sure because she was a tiny one. And it turns out she wasn't. She is a wild turkey. But she had smoke inhalation. And one of the things that we do with our work is we try to develop new techniques to treat difficult problems in avian species. And their lungs are very tiny. A lot of things affect their lungs, and smoke is one of them. So we wanted to see if we could save this little tiny thing who was gasping and almost gone when she arrived.
So Tori would watch television?
Tori was fascinating. We have raised turkeys before, and they're turkeys, and then they're released as turkeys. Tori was raised in the house, so she became imprinted to us, or relatively so. And she one day jumped out of the box and made her way to the sofa and sat down next to my husband and started watching TV. That had gone past, and now she knows how to use the remote control.
What are her favorite programs? Does she like the Discovery Channel, Animal Planet?
She does. She likes Jack Hanna. She loves PBS Kids, and in fact, some days that would be turned on at 5:30 in the morning in our bedroom, and you know, Don and I'd be jarred to awake to Nature Cat blaring out on. And he's like, what did you do? What did you do? And I'm like, Tori turned the TV on and changed the channel. And she changes the channel appropriately, which is kind of very interesting. She loves Jack Hanna. She loves things like that.
And she occasionally helps you write on the computer keyboard, sometimes without success.
And without permission. Let's add that, too. And she colors. They have heat in the tip of their beak, and so she can actually use that in the paint program. And she likes to make designs and that sort of thing.
Do you have any of her artwork?
You know, I do. I do have some artwork.
Maybe you should auction off the artwork for your fundraising.
I think that's probably not a bad idea. People want pictures of her footprints and of everything Tori. She's a pretty famous girl.
Now, our regional manager, the executive producer of the show, Rick Ryer, tells me Tori ended up befriending a doe, a young deer that visited your place in Antigo. Tell me about that.
Tori and the doe have been friends for about 5 years, and every year when doe has the fawn, or a fawn, or twins, as she had last year, Tori flies up on our roof of a house and then looks into the pasture to see where the doe is, where she beds down, and then flies over there, and she helps her out with the fawn. It's an amazing relationship and very unusual. This year, she actually plucked out feathers from her brood patch, and it was a cold time when the fawn was born, and she actually incubated the fawn for a couple of days.
Now, one of those deer met a tragic end?
Actually, doe. About 5 days after the baby, the fawn was born this year, something happened, and she was killed by a large animal.
You think a coyote,
a wolf? I think a coyote or a wolf, right, because it was an injury to the throat, and the fawn disappeared, and we can only assume that it was killed as well.
How did Tori react?
Tori is a very sensitive bird, and watching her in grief has been a real lesson for us.
You're telling me that your pet turkey suffered grief because of the death of a doe.
Well, a different species.
Yeah,
we almost lost her a few years ago when her chicken died, her very favorite chicken. And I actually have video of this in the process, and it's on her site. I would not have thought it possible, but we're starting to see things. Like there was an orca recently that carried her calf, you know, for a couple of weeks before she finally was able to drop it. But she went into huge grief, and she wouldn't come home. I searched the fields and found her with her head on the deceased doe's abdomen.
No kidding.
And she was not
leaving.
Is that
unusual for birds to react to death like that? The death not only of other birds, but animals from a different species?
Well, you know, it is, but she's unusual. She's been raised in an unusual way. I don't know. We're maybe paying more attention to those things now. And perhaps it was that we weren't paying attention that we didn't notice before. Turkeys really need each other, hens, and she's a hen. So they are safer in numbers. So if they lose one of their own, it makes the whole group less safe. And that's probably part of what went on.
So I understand that Tori the turkey, your pet bird, has now gone into the wild and become a mother herself. Tell me about that.
This is interesting. She, we kept her for, well, she actually was injured in, fighting off the animal that killed Doe. She broke her toenails and she had some abdominal injuries. So she was badly injured fighting it off.
Your turkey
yeah.
attacked the animal that attacked the Doe.
Yeah. She's, turkeys are really, they can be aggressive in protecting, you know, their families and that sort of thing. But she broke her toenails. I had to carry her back to the house. And she stayed with us in recovery for, you know, a couple of weeks. And then she was really wanted to go out. And she spends most of every day outside during the summertime. She doesn't like winter, so, you know, she likes to sit in front of the fireplace then and watch TV.
So somehow she found a mate, and she's got babies?
Well, we're not sure. My husband doesn't like to believe that she has a friend, but apparently that's how you get babies. So we know that she had a nest. We haven't seen babies yet, but her behavior is such that she's incubating and has little ones.
So she's become a wild bird. Do you think she'll ever be domesticated and live in your house again and be your pet?
Well, you know, she does come by, and she did come by two nights ago and made herself known. She's working toward that. I think Don's big concern now is that we're rather going to have Tori watching TV and by the fireplace through the winter. We might have like 12 little ones and Tori biking the fireplace. She did try about – when she was about three, she did try to – she befriended a
Marge, I'm trying to imagine 12 turkeys in your living room, and it's
and
not a
husband,
pretty sight.
Right? Well, you know, Tori's potty trained, so maybe she can make that happen with them. But, yeah, she's an interesting bird, and I think that, you know – she's taught us so much, and I think that that's the big thing is that if you're willing to learn and to observe, not giving them qualities that you assume, but just watching for them to reveal their own, there's plenty out there for us to know about.
Well, a lot of people own pet birds, and as you know, I have not only owned cockatiels, but I now own another of your Facebook celebrities, Tootsie Pop, the
yes.
cockatiel that you raised from a hatchling. And Tootsie's husband, Pavarotti, you'll be happy to know that the kids are doing fine.
That's great news.
And she is a very sweet bird, of course, because she was hand-raised. What advice do you have for people who are listening who may want to adopt pet birds, be it parakeets, cockatiels, or parrots?
I think people don't realize how important it is to have consistency in their life. In other words, when you adopt a bird or when you bring a bird into your life, it's for your lifetime. And parrots, for instance, people think that they're, you know, interesting, and they have this idea that they're going to be talking and singing and doing things like that, but they don't realize that they're also very one-person birds. They mate for life, and you become that mate. And they also live a long time. We have a macaw ourselves that we have in our will because she's now 40, but they live to be 100. So she's going to outlive us, and most parrots do outlive their owners. But it's a lifetime thing, and they're very sensitive. They need attention. Boy, do they need attention, and you know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if you just joined us, we're talking to Marge Gibson. She's the executive director of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated. We're talking about a variety of subjects today, including the protection of the environment and wildlife habitats, and also those of us who own pet birds, and she nurses about 1,000 of them, 1,000 wild birds back to health every year. If you'd like to talk to Marge, if you got a question for her, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can access our webpage, wpr.org/route51. As you mentioned, Marge, parrots and cockatoos tend to bond with only one person. What happens when they're left alone for an extended period of time? Say you go on vacation.
Well, they go into a depression. You know, they're alone, and they like to be around. They like a lot of activity. In Richmond, we're just sitting here with the peregrine, and she's really happy with watching you and watching what's going on
here.
And
I consider that a real compliment.
Exactly. She's been preening my hair as she's watching you, which is a compliment. But their lives are full in the wild. And we have to somehow replicate that through behaviors or through things that we give them to play to keep their minds active, because their minds are very active. So if you go on vacation and you put them in a situation where there's nobody to talk to and, you know, no music playing or anything like that, they'll pluck feathers. They get very depressed and they can get destructive because they're mad. And frankly, if you were left alone, you would probably be a little unsettled yourself.
How intelligent are these birds? I've heard that some of them can approach the intelligence of a 2 or 3 year old child, which I find hard to believe.
I think that that's underestimating. I think more older than that.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I know, first of all, just talking about my turkey, she's not on the level of people would say, you know, turkeys are super intelligent, but turkeys haven't been studied. Let's just put that out there. And, you know, we're looking at a bird that knows how to use a remote control that taught herself.
Should people even be allowed to own really intelligent birds like cockatoos?
See, I don't think so.
You don't?
I think that, you know, it was the pet trade that kind of brought them to the forefront. And now we're starting to see, you know, people contact us all the time about, you know, they have a parrot that, you know, was sort of bought on the spur of the moment for their, you know, for their spouse or their grandparent or something like that. And they don't realize that they live for a really long time. And the bond that that bird creates with its owner or with its main person is a mate bond, which is a for-life bond. And, you know, you can't just rehome them easily because it really doesn't work that way.
Do you encounter people who have unusual birds for pets, crows, ravens, mockingbirds, cardinals, other songbirds?
Well, they're illegal to have under our federal rules. So at one point, people used to have crows a lot. I think farmers, you know, would find them and used to have them. And it was people teach them to talk.
Boy, they're really smart.
They're very smart. In fact, we have three crows that are educational birds at Reggie now. People used to think that you had to split their tongue or something to teach them to talk. That is not true. They have a huge vocabulary. We have a raven that you have to remember, we have interns that are college people, and they teach our birds to talk and to say things. So some of them have some very colorful language and interesting and interesting phrases that they say. One raven, as people walk by, go, "You too shall die," in that voice. They mimic me and call my interns and using my voice, and people are looking for me. And so there's all kinds of hijinks that go on when you have crows and ravens due to their intelligence and due to their love of hijinks, of causing mischief, and they're always into. They're funny birds, and they have a great sense of humor, and that it shows.
You take in a number of pets that have been rescued. What typically happens in those cases? Why do the birds end up coming to you?
People get bored with them. They don't realize that it is a lifetime commitment. They don't want to be picking up after them, that sort of thing, or realize that it costs money to feed them. And it is a commitment. You know, dogs and cats don't have the lifespan that a parrot does. We have a parrot now that we adopted 43 years ago, and she's still in the prime of life. So these are birds that have a really long lifespan, and they should stay in the family rather than just being a temporary bird that someone's making money on selling and then it dies because it's depressed and it dies in grief.
If someone sees a pet bird that's being abused or not taken care of, what should they do?
I think they should try to get it help and try to call to make sure that there's a place for it. There are some parrot rescues. Unfortunately, they fill up so quickly because parrots are long-lived. And, trying to rehome them after they've suffered some abuse or things like that is a problem.
Stella's making noise again, the peregrine falcon.
She is. She's having a great time. I'm actually very proud of her and kind of surprised, but she thinks the studio is like the best thing she's seen in like weeks.
So make some calls and get some help for the birds.
Make some calls and get some help. They should be well fed. They should be well treated. They shouldn't be living in a basement, for instance. They need stimulation. They need to use their brain to solve problems and to do all kinds of things. Music. I mean, almost anything can enhance them.
Today on Route 51, our guest is Marge Gibson, Executive Director of the Raptor Education Group Wildlife Rehab Center in Antigo. You can find out more about donating for their new clinic at raptoreducationgroup.org. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, we could still squeeze in a call or two at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Going to take a short break. Here are the Trashmen.
Oh, well, everybody's heard about the bird.
Marley and the Wailers taking us into our next segment of Route 51 with our guest, Marge Gibson, Executive Director of the Raptor Education Group Wildlife Rehabilitation Center in Antigo. Marge and her small staff take care of about 1,000 injured eagles, raptors, loons, ducks, shorebirds, and songbirds every year, and they are planning on opening an expanded wildlife center this fall. You can check it out on their website. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. Marge, lead poisoning is a big concern. What does lead do to an eagle?
Well, it causes all kinds of neurologic problems. They have difficulty standing, moving, and then it causes basically organ failure of all the organs of the body.
And how do they contract lead poisoning typically?
Generally, we're now entering fall, which is going to be our lead poisoning season for eagles because it abuts up to hunting season. And those that use lead ammunition, when they shoot something, it doesn't pass right through the animal like people feel it does. It fragments because lead is a soft metal. And that it can go within 18 inches of the wound channel. So a lot of the meat is, has lead bits in it.
So you're asking hunters and anglers, fishermen, to forego the lead right. ammunition and tackle if possible.
There are alternatives, and I think that there's a kind of a scare tactic being used, and for the life of me, don't understand why lead has been removed from our paint and from other things. But people say, well, it's more expensive. Well, it is a little more expensive, but you're talking cents. You're not talking, dollars or, hundreds of dollars. So I think a lead bullet, we priced at 42 mm-hmm. cents, and a copper bullet, which is much preferred, is about 70 cents.
Now, you worked rescuing oil-soaked birds many years ago at one of the worst man-made disasters, the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was really, we didn't know what to expect when we went up. I had never seen anything quite so large in my life. And we had landing, you just see this massive sea of black. And you can only imagine, the animals that are there. It was fascinating on a number of levels. We found that the birds actually, the eagles at least, compensated and they cooperated with their
rescuers,
with rescuers, and with birds that lived within their even within their territory, and shared fishing areas, which is kind of unheard of.
Did what they could to keep the species alive.
As a matter of fact, that's true. And so we were. They surprised us. There were, you know, a lot of good things that happened, but there was devastation as well.
We had a recap of that with the British Petroleum oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico a few years ago. And now we've got a problem with our oceans, huge islands of plastic microbeads that are showing up even in the once pristine waters of Lake Superior, and, of course, the threats of global warming and climate change, which we've talked about. So, you know, this stuff isn't going away, and I worry sometimes that it's not getting better.
It's mind-boggling. We have an obligation as humans on this planet to do our best to preserve it and to preserve the ecosystems. It's something that we must do as people in charge, so to speak. It's mind-boggling how people lose that sense of responsibility and how they somehow don't feel that it's something they can do. But everyone has a part to play, and everyone should, care. Because it does affect all of us, and not only wildlife, but us as well.
Well, you're an educator. You talk to a lot of people. Some of them are skeptical of the science behind climate change. Some don't even believe in, you know, the biological sciences, the science of evolution. How do you get through to them?
I think that, you know, education is important, and you use different techniques, and some people are want to hear things that are important to them. And you can maybe bring up those things, even their own children, families, that sort of thing. But I think just education is so important, and on a number of levels, and we just have to keep trying.
Do you think we need to be doing a better job at educating our children in our public and private schools about the science of biology and the ecology and climate and how everything's interrelated?
I think that goes without saying. I think that, you know, we have to do a better job. There are many things that we leave out now for, you know, whether it's for financial reasons or for lack of having a lot of teachers. We are kind of a sink in teachers at this point. But it's ultra important to our world and to our own survival. That's important. We can't ignore it.
Well, Marge, we're down to our last few seconds. Any thoughts you'd like to share with the people who are listening?
I really appreciate that the people who call us and who bring us birds and who really care. And the good news is I'm starting to see more of those. And I feel that we are having an effect. And it's nice to see that we're making a difference. So, it's up to everybody, though, to kind of keep spreading that.
All right. Marge Gibson, thanks so much once again for being with us.
You bet. Thank you, Jim.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drum in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like a bird.
We want to thank today's guests, Marge Gibson, Executive Director of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, or REGI, a nonprofit wildlife rehabilitation and learning center in rural Antigo. Thanks also to Marge's friend, Stella the Peregrine Falcon, who made her own contributions to this radio show. You can find out more about the Raptor Education Group and the fundraising drive for their new expanded clinic at their website, raptoreducationgroup.org, or on the Raptor Education Group Facebook page. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Thanks to our on-air producer, Isidore McCusker. Thanks also to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by It's a Beautiful Day, Paul McCartney, the late great Aretha Franklin, The Trashmen, Bob Marley and the Wailers, and the Neville Brothers. Next week on Route 51, our guest is Republican Congressman Sean Duffy, who's seeking his fifth term representing Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. He faces Democrat Margaret Ingebretson in the November election. If you missed part of this show, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.